The living being is bound by illusion when he considers himself the proprietor of the subtle and gross material bodies. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the living entity may be designated as Jivamaya, whereas matter is called Gunamaya. The living entity places his living potency, Jivamaya, in the grip of the mundane qualitative potency, Gunamaya, and falsely believes that he is part and parcel of the material world. Such an artificial mixture is called illusion or ignorance. When all of the Lord's potencies are correctly perceived in their proper categories, the living entity is liberated from material bondage and returns to his blissful eternal residence in the spiritual sky. The personality of Godhead is not different from his potencies, yet he is always above them as the supreme controller. The supreme personality of Godhead may be designated as mukta or liberated, only to indicate that he is eternally free from material contamination and never to indicate that the Lord has been freed from actual entanglement in a material situation. According to Srila Madhvacharya, vidya indicates the goddess of fortune, the internal potency of the Lord, whereas avidya indicates Durga, the external potency of the Lord. Ultimately, however, the personality of Godhead can transform his potency according to his own desire, as explained by Srila Prabhupada in his Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.34, quote, because the Lord is the absolute transcendence, all of his forms, names, pastimes, attributes, associates and energies are identical with him. His transcendental energy acts according to his omnipotency. The same energy acts as his external, internal and marginal energies. And by his omnipotency he can perform anything and everything through the agency of any of the above energies. He can turn the external energy into internal by his will. Unquote. Srila Sridhara Swami notes in this regard that although the Lord has explained in the first verse of this chapter that the living entity is never actually in bondage and therefore never actually liberated, one may apply the terms bondage and liberation if one remembers that the living entity is eternally a transcendental fragment of the personality of Godhead. Further, one should not misinterpret the words maya, me, nir, and te to indicate that both material bondage and liberation are temporary states, being creations of the potency of the Lord. Therefore, the term ajay or primeval and eternal is used in this verse. The vijaya and the vijaya potencies of the Lord are stated to be creations of maya because they carry out the functions of the Lord's potencies. The vijaya potency engages the living entities in the Lord's pastimes, whereas the vijaya potency engages the living entities in forgetting the Lord and merging into darkness. Actually, both knowledge and ignorance are eternal alternatives of the marginal potency of the Lord. And in this sense, it is not incorrect to state that the living entity is either eternally conditioned or eternally liberated. The term venirati or produced in this case indicates that the Lord expands his own energy as knowledge and ignorance, which display the functions of the Lord's internal and external potencies. Such potential exhibitions may appear and disappear in different times, places and circumstances, but material bondage and spiritual freedom are eternal options of the marginal potency of the Lord. Everyone got that? I'll read the verse again. Vidya vijaya vimakano vidyura vanacharir nam moksha bandakari adye mayaya me vinyanti. O Uddhava, both knowledge and ignorance being products of maya, are expansions of my potency. Both knowledge and ignorance are beginningless and perpetually reward liberation and bondage to embodied living beings. Can you put your bag over here? He's got one. My problem. Thanks. So, in these verses, first of all, Krishna states that, in essence, in actuality, the spirit soul, the eternal spirit souls in the material world, are never actually conditioned, they're never actually entangled in the material energy, and therefore there's no question of liberation either. Then he describes that still the terms are used, condition, a living entity can be eternally conditioned or eternally liberated. So both things have been mentioned. So the spirit soul never becomes entangled or conditioned by the material energy, in the sense that the spirit soul's eternal, essential spiritual nature, it never changes. It's not like when you add milk to Wheaties and, you know, it's situation changes. The spirit soul, even in the material world, is not modified. In the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, the second chapter, it describes that the spirit soul cannot be burned, cannot be moistened in the water, cannot be withered by the wind,
cannot be burned by fire.
Cannot be burned by fire. What else?
Sunset.
One more.
Cut into pieces.
Cannot be cut into pieces. That's
fire.
Right. Yeah. So that means that it's unchangeable. So the spirit soul can be in the material world, but nothing can change its nature. It remains exactly the way it is before it enters the material world, while it's in the material world, and after it leaves the material world, nothing changes. So in that sense, it's not actually conditioned, it's not changed, modified, restructured, mixed, or anything like that. So in that way, Krishna is saying that the spirit soul is never truly conditioned by the material energy, therefore there's no question of liberation. It's not like it became withered up and then, you know, it again become back to its normal position. It just never changed. Yet we can apply the terms condition, that a spirit soul is conditioned by the material energy, in this sense, that the spirit soul, the unchanging spirit soul, identifies itself with the material energy and not with its unchanging spiritual nature. Therefore, in that sense, it becomes conditioned. Therefore, a person actually thinks that when the material body is burned, cut, moistened, dried, that the person is actually being changed or modified or conditioned. But actually the spirit soul is only identifying with the body and therefore identifying with the changes and modifications and the conditions, but it's actually none of it's really happening. In the same way as described in yesterday's verse, if we have a dream and one may think that one is being chased by a tiger, so then you wake up you realise that you weren't being chased by a tiger. In fact, there's no tiger in your bedroom at all. You're just laying in the bed. Nothing really actually happened. It's just what you imagine is happening to you in a distorted state of consciousness. So the spirit soul like that, nothing is actually happening to it, but it's imagining so many things are happening to it because it's identifying with the dream material, the dream body. When the spirit soul identifies itself with the material body, it is considered to be conditioned in that sense, so we can apply it. And therefore, when the spirit soul comes to the point, and that's a point of ignorance, that's a state of ignorance or illusion, and by knowledge, realizing that we are spirit soul, within the material body, then one comes out of that state, dreamlike state of material existence, stops identifying with the material body, and that is considered to be liberated. So in that way, we can apply the terms. So we apply those terms to define those two states, and at the same time, we understand that in actuality, nothing really changed according to the spirit soul's actual eternal situation. Now, Krishna also, in answering Uddhava's question, he throws another dimension in, and since Uddhava's asked about liberated and conditioned souls, he's also described his own position, and of course, it's described that he is also eternally liberated. But again, that needs some clarification. In this case, Krishna never becomes bewildered. He never enters the material energy, becomes illusioned by it. He doesn't accept the material body to falsely identify with it. So he always remains the controller of the material energy. In that way, he's eternally liberated. Not like a living entity who becomes designated as conditioned, being under illusion, and then liberated. But in the Bhagavad Gita, it describes another dimension to the Lord's position. In the 15th chapter, in text number 16, Krishna says there are two classes of beings, the fallible and the infallible. So that's the conditioned and the liberated. One who thinks they're the material body and one who's risen above that through knowledge and realize, I'm not this material body, I'm the spirit soul. So there's the fallible, the infallible. In the material world, every living entity is fallible. And in the spiritual world, every living entity is called infallible. So then he goes on to describe in the next verse, text number 17, that besides these two, there is the greatest living personality, the Supreme Soul, the imperishable Lord himself, who has entered the three worlds and is maintaining them. Text 18, because I am transcendental, beyond both the fallible and the infallible, and because I am the greatest, I am celebrated both in the world and in the Vedas as that Supreme Person. Text 19. Whoever knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead without doubting is the knower of everything. He therefore engages himself in full devotional service to me, O Son of Bharat. Text 20. This is the most confidential part of Vedic scriptures, O sinless one. And it is disclosed now by me. Whoever understands this will become wise, and his endeavours will know perfection. So there, Krishna is summing up these same points, which is, as Krishna addresses Arjuna as a sinless one, meaning that only those who give up sinful life can actually understand that information. As long as a person is immersed in sinful life, which basically means illicit sex, gambling, meat eating, intoxication, they can never really come to that platform to understand that they are a spirit soul, sometimes in a conditioned state, sometimes in a liberated state, and that beyond them, transcendental, even to those living entities in the material and spiritual world, is the Supreme Lord himself, who is the greatest of all and who is maintaining all others. He's the origin of all other living entities, he's the greatest of all living entities, and he is maintaining all living entities. So there's an extra dimension there of Krishna's own position. So we have the liberated, the conditioned, and then Krishna, who is greater and beyond and maintaining all others. Krishna is describing here that because he is in control of all other living entities, some he is placing in bondage by illusion, by withdrawing knowledge, by his avidya potency. His potency to put one into illusion. And some he is helping to be liberated by expanding his vidipotency, his potency of knowledge. Now, here it's described in purport that describes here. According to Śrīmad-Bhācārya, Abhijja indicates the goddess of fortune or the internal potency of the Lord, whereas Abhijja indicates Durga, the external potency of the Lord. So, again, in the Bhagavad Gita, where would we find the verse describing those who are under the Abhijja? The great souls are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. So there it describes that those who understand Krishna, those who surrender to Krishna, they are under his spiritual potency, his vidya potency, or daily prakriti. So, again, where in the Bhagavad Gita is that stated that without surrendering to Krishna, one cannot be under his daily prakriti? Where is that stated? Yes, 7:14. Devi Yesha Kurumai, Mama Maya Dracaya, Mami Vaye Pajante, Mayami Tantarantate. This divine energy of mine, so there he's referring to the material energy, but he's calling it divine because it's acting under his divine will. So the material energy consisting of the three modes of material nature is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. So there Krishna is saying that the living entity is in the marginal energy of the Lord. That means that as spirit souls, we're either under Krishna's material energy, avidya, gunamaya. So we're either under the material energy, gunamaya, or immediately we're not under the material energy, then we have to be under the spiritual energy. We're under one of Krishna's energies, either material or spiritual. Those who don't surrender to Krishna, they cannot be placed under the spiritual energy. They must be under the material energy. And one who does surrender to Krishna, takes up devotional service, they are under the spiritual energy of the Lord, the vidya potency. So, what famous verse do we find some discussion from Krishna's vidya potency?
Is it still Dharma Prithivi and Ami Kanchan?
Is the word Vidya in that translation?
Yes.
चैत्रदात्तनं नाञ्जनं भवमः सुभगं वर्धनं श्रीरङ्गचन्द्रिकार्थं जीवनम् अनन्तं गरीभावनं प्रतिफलनकृतं पृथक्साधनं सार्वकृष्णपदं जय जय श्रीकृष्णसङ्कीर्तनम्. So that verse of the first verse of the Shishastikam, in that verse Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes seven principal characteristics of from the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So those who surrender to Krishna, they're always thinking of Krishna. They're always chanting, they're always hearing His holy name, they're always chanting His holy name like that. So there are seven attributes of Krishna's holy name. The first one is Chaitodhapana Najana, which is a very interesting analogy given there, that by chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra, it actually cleanses the mirror of the mind, which is actually a really good example to understand this question of liberation and conditioning. Because when you're looking in a mirror, the dust covers your image, so you can't see yourself clearly. So you have a distorted image of what you look like. The mirror represents our mind. Our mind, our spiritual mind, is covered by the mind is like the mirror, and it is covered with the dust of material desires, material impressions. So when we look at ourselves, we can't quite see our spiritual nature. When we chant Hare Krishna, we cleanse all that dust off. But it's a really nice analogy, because there you see how the one is not actually conditioned. The person never becomes dusty and undusted. It's only his reflection that does it. See? So the person is looking at himself and he's thinking, now I'm conditioned. There's all dust. And then you chant Hare Krishna, wipes the dust off, and now I'm liberated. But actually, it was just the reflection. And the person himself was never covered with the dust or uncovered. So it's a really nice analogy to describe again that the spirit soul is never actually conditioned, liberated, but these terms may apply because one is identifying with the reflection, the man in the mirror, as Michael Jackson would say. Michael Jackson has a song, let's start with the man in the mirror. So we also have that slogan, Chaitodhapana Najanam. Let's start with the man in the mirror. But who is the man in the mirror? Now Michael Jackson thought he was Michael Jackson, so he doesn't know who the man in the mirror is. That's the problem. You clean off the dust and then you can see, oh, I'm not Michael Jackson, I'm actually a spirit soul. Then you can start with the man in the mirror. So the first installment of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is that conditioned state of misidentification of one's nature is cleansed away, and one can see oneself as a pure spirit soul. The interesting thing is, when you cleanse a mirror, what else do you see? You don't just see you standing there in a void, you see everything else. So when you actually see yourself as a spirit soul, you immediately see eternal religious principles. You can understand all the five factors that are mentioned within the Bhagavad Gita, actually. You can see yourself in relationship to the Supreme Lord. You can understand time, karma, activity, nijiva, prakriti, and purush, nishvara. All these things become understandable when one sees oneself. In the same way, when the sun comes up, you don't just see yourself, you see everything else that you're related to. So that is proper understanding of oneself. Just like if you want to know how wealthy you are, you have to know how wealthy you are in relationship to everyone else's wealth. A little child may have a couple of 3, 4, 5 cent pieces in their hands and they think, oh, I am so wealthy. But that's because they don't understand what that money is in relationship to other people who have money. When they understand, well, I have 3 or 4 bills, and they have rooms full of money, so therefore I'm not so wealthy. So to see oneself means to know oneself means to know oneself in relationship to everything, to the Supreme Lord. By chanting Hare Krishna, you can actually see the pure soul. Chaita Dhamma Marjana Bhava Mahadha Bhagni. That even though the spirit soul is in the material world, because you see yourself as a spirit soul, you no longer engage in sinful activities and sinful reactions. So the suffering of and you're no longer identifying with the material body, so the suffering of material existence ceases. The burning fire, the blazing fire of material existence ceases. The one chance to have a Krishna Maha Mantra. That the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra spreads the rays of the benediction moon. By chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one is released from the avijja potency, the potency of illusion, guna maya, material energy, and one comes under the soothing spiritual rays, Krishna's spiritual energy. And when one comes into contact with Krishna through his holy name, then the soothing rays of Krishna's spiritual energy begin to unfurl all good fortune within one's existence. Just as, in the moonlight, beautiful flowers sometimes blossom. So within the heart, the flower of one's attachment and love for the Supreme Lord begins to blossom, and that's the beginning of one's good fortune. Now that is today the verse discussing vidya. That vidya vadu jivanam. Vidya, as we know, is Krishna's spiritual potency. Is actually knowledge of Krishna, knowledge of oneself in relationship to Krishna. It's actually Krishna consciousness. Vidya is Krishna consciousness. And the highest manifestation of vidya or Krishna consciousness is the consciousness of Radharani in her Mahabhava. So Radharani's experience and understanding of Krishna, that is the topmost manifestation of this vidya potency. That is the full manifestation of the vidya potency. Therefore, we ask for the blessings of Srimati Radharani so that we can have, be blessed with Krishna consciousness, some appreciation, understanding, love, and taste. For Krishna. Vidya Vadu means the wife. Vidya Vadu Jivanam, the wife of Krishna. Krishna is not different from his holy name. His wife is Srimati Radharani. She is Vidya. She is spiritual potency and the sum of Krishna consciousness, the sum of consciousness. Vijayabhava Jivana, the life. Jivana means the life of. So the life of Srimati Radharani's consciousness or mind or thoughts is Krishna. The Krishna consciousness. Vidyavada Jivanam. So by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we actually become Krishna conscious, because we actually, under the Devi Prakriti, we're under the protection of the divine potency, who is none other than Srimati Radharani. Being under the protection of Srimati Radharani, she is Vidya, one becomes blessed with Krishna consciousness. That's Vidya is sometimes taken as material knowledge as well. It does include material knowledge. As described, one who knows Krishna knows everything. One knows, you know, the spirit soul, the material energy, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One knows everything. Actually, Varuni always says that to me. She says, I know Krishna, I know everything. I made the mistake of telling you one day. Don't tell me, I know everything. I know Krishna. So, material knowledge is included, but one who thinks that they have vidya, knowledge, and they're not surrendered to Krishna, that's another form of ignorance. That's described in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada often states that immediately we understand someone is not a devotee of Krishna, immediately we say you're a fool. And people may object, you know, oh, you know, I have my degrees and, you know, qualifications and so many years in university and I'm a big scientist. And, no. According to the Bhagavad Gita, you haven't surrendered to Krishna, you're a fool. Because they don't know Krishna. They're either four categories. There's a mutha fool, the Naradana fool, the Mayapariti Kama fool, and the Asura fool. Four different types of fools and rascals, because they don't know Krishna. Some of them, like mutha, they don't claim they have any knowledge, but they're fools. Others claim to have knowledge, they're bigger fools. because they're in the same ignorance, but they think they're intelligent. Yeah, they don't surrender. They're all fools. So that type of vidya is not what is referred to here. Vidya means one who has knowledge, Krishna consciousness, then their knowledge of spiritual and material things is actually, you know, proper. They have intelligence. One who has knowledge, vidya, which does not include Krishna consciousness, they're actually fools. They're fools who think they're intelligent. Vijayavada Jivanam, Anandaburi Vadam, the chanting of the holy name expands the ocean of transcendental bliss. So one realizes one is a spirit soul. One comes to the point of Krishna consciousness, understands that you know, one can have an eternal relationship with Krishna. Everything in the we only have a relationship with Krishna. Whatever we have a relationship with is actually with Krishna, but we think it is with something else. But our natural position and our eternal position is always to be related to Krishna, because Krishna is everything. It's not possible to not have a relationship with God, because God is everything. And as soon as you, you know, you walk towards the door, you have a relationship with the door. That door is, you know, part of the Supreme Lord's material energy. because in the temple it's part of his under his spiritual energy. But there's a relationship. As soon as you walk on the ground, there's a relationship with walking on the ground. That ground is a manifestation of Krishna's energy. Everything we do is a relationship with either Krishna's material or spiritual energy. At every moment we're constantly related with Krishna. The difference is, in the material world we're related to Krishna's material energy, but we don't have, we've severed our personal relationship, or we've forgotten our personal relationship. But under the direction of the spiritual energy, that personal relationship is again revived, where you can actually talk to the Supreme Lord and he will talk to you. And that relationship, that beautiful relationship with the Supreme Lord, which is in five different, you know, four varieties of Vaishnava, as I said, servitude, friendship, parental, conjugal, these rasas, they establishing one's personal relationship with the Supreme Lord opens up that unlimited ocean of nectar. Anandam Buddhivadam. Saravatma Snapam. I've forgotten something there. Pratipanam Purnam Vritasvadam. Pratipadam Gunam Vritasvadam. There are seven attributes. It depends who is giving the commentary on those seven attributes. There's slight variation. Ananda Bodhi Vardhanam, I get up to five. And Pratipadam Gunam Vritasvadam, I count as 5B. According to, you know, how different acharyas are, because there are two more. that nectar is tasted at every step of life, that the holy name of the Lord. The establishing one's relationship with the Supreme Lord brings one to the shore of the ocean of rasa, of nectar. And engaging in that relationship, one then tastes that nectar. It's just like if you go to the beach. There's a difference between going to the beach and standing on the shore of the water and diving in. So, you know, there's one establishes, re-establishes that relationship, and by actually churning that beautiful, loving relationship, one tastes that relationship with the Supreme. It's described that, you know, there are different types of bhavas, and the different emotions, different activities, until one engages in activities with the Supreme Lord, which is a particular type of bhava, those activities, and experiences the emotions through those activities, which is a particular type of bhava, only then will rasa be produced. And it's just like if someone gets married, so you may have the wedding rings, and you have the certificate, but until there's activities and exchanges, you don't actually taste anything from that relationship. You know, you get married. Imagine people get married and they never talk to each other, but they live in the same house. It's like that. So, Priti Padam Panam Vritasvadana means that one tastes that nectar at every step. One tastes that nectar at every step through prema bhakti. That's where the rasa is actually tasted, the taste of the relationship with the Supreme Lord. And Sarvabhavana Snapanam. Sarvabhavana Snapanam means that the living entity has been chanting Hare Krishna. He realizes his spiritual identity. He realizes his eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. He's acting on that relationship with Prema and tasting the nectar of the ecstasy of the love of God. That completely cures the spirit soul of material existence. That is the full cure. All the way along, you know, at every step, you know, cleansing the mirror of the mind, you know, becoming Krishna conscious, you know, realize, you know, spiritual activities, spiritual emotions, rasa. At every step one is becoming more and more cured. But the complete cure is this sarva snapalam, when that, you know, prema is there, there's this beautiful loving relationship with the Supreme Lord. It completely embalms one. You know, it completely covers one externally, means one's mind, body, you know, words, everything is, you know, completely coated externally, and internally one's very soul is covered with this nectar, rasa, you know, love of God. And that nectar covering and being embalmed, just like one rubs a lotion, right? You, sometimes when you have some you know, spider bite or something, you know, it's burning. The material existence is like that, with burning in the forest fire, material existence. But this balm of love of God, it completely soothes one internally, externally, and one is completely cured of material existence. Vampajayati Sri Krishna Sankirtan, that is the seventh excellence of chanting the holy name. That therefore the holy name is glorious because it establishes this love for Sri Sri Radha Krishna above all other things. You know, that is the victory flag. Just like now they're celebrating man, you know, they put their flag on the moon and so they think. But we are holding up our flag, you know, that above going to the moon, above going to any of the heavenly planets, above liberation, we're putting this flag in your heart, but above all of that is love for Sri Sri Radha Krishna. That is the victory flag that will make everything else appear to be defeat. And that Sri Krishna Sankirtan Ija. Paramvijayate, it also indicates that of all the religious principles, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is most important, especially in the sage of Kali. It's actually an eternal activity of the soul. There are many religious principles that we follow in this world. They're all to bring us to the point of chanting the holy name of the Lord in the love of God. Every other religious principle, you go through the Quran, you go through the Bible, you go through Buddha's books, you go through any religious principle, every single one of them is meant for that purpose, to bring you to the point to call out the name Gaura Nichai with love and prema. If you have done that, then all your religious practices have finally borne fruit. And until you can call out the name of God with love, all your religious practices are useless. So, Paramvijayate, Sri Krishna Sankirtan, it is the supreme, all glory. It is the most glorious of all you know, religious principles and activities. So these are the different seven, you know, occurrences of chanting the holy name of the Lord. Vidyavaga Jivanam, becoming Krishna conscious. So by chanting Hare Krishna, everything is fully understood and fully accomplished. Param Vidyate Shri Krishna Sankirtan Ki. Any questions?
Not only like my what is it? I was in this like picture, oh, and there is, so it's not there. Yeah, you are God. Yeah. So is it like a proper asana?
Yeah, we have to first of all appreciate God that He exists. if we do not even understand that God exists, God is a person, and that He is the Supreme Lord and the maintainer of all the two unscriptural worlds, then we will, if we don't have that understanding, we will not be inclined to approach Him, we will not be inclined to revive our relationship with Him. Will be disrespectful, we will engage in sinful activity. So it's very, very important to actually go through that stage of Krishna consciousness. It means that you will then be inclined to approach the Supreme Lord. When you approach Him, you'll find that He is very beautiful and very sweet, and therefore you'll fall in love with Him. That is automatic. But if you don't approach them in the first place, because there's no appreciation and respect, then you can never get to the platform of love for the Supreme Lord. Because you won't even approach Him. And a person might give up sinful life.
But in there also there is some kind of fear, like if I don't do this, maybe these kind of things happen.
Yeah, that fear should be there. if there's no fear of God, there should be some slight Arjun. When he understood that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, he wanted Krishna to show his universal form in order to prove, to all people who would come in the future who claim to be God, that let them show the universal form. This people may say, I am God, or this one is God, but unless they can display the universal form and display that they can marry 16,000 wives and so many things like that, then they're not God. So Arjuna wanted that Krishna to reveal that. So it would be concluded that this conversation that Arjuna and Krishna had, it would be solidified by this personal demonstration. So Krishna revealed that universal form, and Arjuna was terrified. He immediately becomes very, very fearful. Because he could see just a partial, just a little bit of the Lord's opulences. Very, very powerful, unlimited. The Lord is unlimited. Just like, when we see something that's very powerful, you naturally become fearful. You see a big wave, maybe twice the size of the height of this temple. You look at that wave and you become fearful. It's natural. It's just so powerful. But, we have no idea of the power of the Lord by His breath. We're talking one wave, in the little bay of Melbourne. One breath of the Lord pushes out all the universes. And when He breathes in, they're all sucked back in. This is one breath. He's barely even flexed His muscles. There should be some fear. There should be some, when you understand the Lord's opulences. If it's not, then the understanding of what God is not there. But although He's so powerful, He's also very, very sweet, and He wants to share His power with all of us as friends. So when, although someone is very powerful, if they're your best friend, then there's no fear. When I was in primary school, as a young boy, my father always taught me judo and karate and boxing and different things like that. And so I never really had such a fear of big people that other people do. There was this one boy I think it was grade 5 or something, primary school, and he stayed down maybe 4 or 5 years, so he was almost an adult. So we were like, you know, little kids. And, you know, he was just huge. He was twice the size of us, and he was big. A little bit cross-eyed, and not very bright. And everyone was absolutely terrified. He just would have to look at you. And, people were terrified of him. But I never quite had that fear, and so he really liked me. Because no one else would be his friend. Everyone was so scared that they wouldn't be, you know, they wouldn't think of being his friend. They just couldn't come near him and they'd shake him. So yeah, I used to talk to him like that. So he became my friend, and of course no one in the school would come near me. No one, no one would touch me because my friend was this big giant, cross-eyed giant, you know. And but he used to play with me. So you always got to remember their power. Sometimes, you know, because his nature, he used to like to fight and wrestle. So I'm just like this and he's like this. So he used to sometimes pick me up and laugh, and he'd just throw me across the room like this. You know, smash against the wall and drop to the ground. You know, but one of the good things, because I did judo, I was actually... I was a Victorian champion when I was about in grade 5. So I used to know how to fall. You could throw me around and I'd actually know how to, you know, not get hurt. So he liked that as well. So, so he used to pick me up and throw me around. So, you know, there's... you know, there should be fear to understand the potency of God, but knowing that He's your friend, then there should be no fear. It's because we've forgotten to make friends with Him that we're fearful.
Probably the same how at a certain stage we talk to God and then God talks to us back. Does that mean that He talks to us?
Through the guru or person. Yeah. You know, devotees, Krishna at first speaks to all the devotees. He describes that in the Bhagavad Gita, Tisham. He's giving intelligence. He's speaking to all these devotees. At first, you know, he speaks through the books, the guru, the sadhus. But then he will speak personally. But gradually you come to realize that he's always speaking personally. So even when Krishna speaks through the books, you can take that Krishna is personally telling you something. You know, and if the guru, through the guru, Krishna is speaking, you can take that Krishna is personally telling you. He's personally guiding you. It's personal in the sense that, you know, although he is in charge of maintaining all the living entities within, you know, all the material and spiritual worlds, he's personally watching you and I, and at every moment, and giving us personal direction and instruction at every second. That's personal because there's millions and millions of living entities, and you know, he has all his activities in the spiritual world. And yet he's taking the time to, you know, personally make sure that at every second he's actually communicating, you know, with us. So that's personal. Even though through guru, through the Srimad Bhagavatam, and sometimes, you know, personally speaking, you know, it's a very, you know, advanced knowledge. But we also, you know, we have to understand that, for instance, it describes that the sound of the birds are the whispering voice of the Lord. You know, if you look at the universal form of the Lord, which is for those who find it difficult to relate to the Lord as a person, so it helps them to, you know, have some personal concept. And you look at the universal form of the Lord, in many different ways, the Lord is also acting through his material energy. Now, a devotee will take that the Lord is personally talking to them again, even when he's acting through the material energy. As is described in this purport, that ultimately the Lord's energy is one, and he can act through the material or spiritual energy in any way he likes. So whether it's through, you know, aspects of material energy, whether it's through the guru and the sadhus and the, you know, shastra who are under the spiritual energy, the Supreme Lord has taken the time to communicate with us personally. We have to learn the art of listening. Now, it's always, you know, sometimes we may be in the mood that, you know, one day Krishna will speak to me, and, you know, but Krishna's always, Krishna's never not communicating with the devotees. Never. There's never a moment where he's not actually trying to communicate. We just don't have the, you know, we're a little bit, you know, in our own little worlds, so we don't hear Krishna speaking. And even sometimes, you know, whichever form it comes from.
So the voice coming along,
Well, guys, you're about to have. Radhakrishna Gita. But the art is, we have to, in order to hear, in order to understand what Krishna is saying, we have to learn that art from the guru, from the devotees, and from the shastra. Because without learning that art, we can sometimes hear what we want to hear and say that that is God talking. So that we have to get. So we have to learn that art through the guru, sadhu, and shastra.